Blog Talk Radio.
What it means. It has been weeks since the harrowing events of Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. Weeks since 19 children and two of their teachers were mowed down by a young man bearing an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle, who let loose hundreds of bullets into a school. From day one, the cops portrayed themselves as heroes who selflessly defended the lives of the children and teachers, until phone cams showed them in the hallways of the school, waiting, as these children were slowly and methodically slain, while cops waited a few feet away. How many cops? More than in a parking lot at Dunkin' Donuts. Several dozen, at least 19, then 20, 50, over 100, almost 400 cops. It took almost an hour and a half, actually 77 minutes, until the threat was neutralized. 77 minutes of death of babies. 7-year-olds, 10-year-olds, bright, aspiring kids. Some who dialed 911 for help, not knowing that the cops were already there. From the first several minutes, they were there, armed with semi-automatic rifles and shields, waiting. What good were they? How can any parent feel safe sending their child to school, ever? Why should they ever trust police again? In love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
And greetings, Na'at-Hotep, to everyone. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Mrs. T, and as usual, it is always wonderful to be able to be here with you live and in living color. Needless to say, we just heard from none other than Mumia Abu-Jamal. And we're going to try to find another commentary from him very shortly, but that was his latest commentary. And so we wanted to share that one with you, as we tend to do, and as we also get ready for what is known as Black August. Yep, Black August is coming, and of course, it will focus on, needless to say, political prisoners. So we're going to talk more about that a little later on. But in the meantime, it is time to do what, family? Hey, it is time to do this. Well, we thought it was time to do that. For some reason, it didn't queue up. I'm not sure why. Let's try that again. Oh, still not queuing up. Okay. Well, we'll come back to that very shortly for some strange reason. The music that we wanted to start off with for tonight did not come through. So what we're going to do is wait to bring that on. Let me see. Okay, it's saying an error just came up. No problem. We'll revisit that shortly. Okay. But at any rate, you are in tune to New Day, Resurrection, Liberation. Tonight, we are going to talk about a couple of things, including gentrification. You know, that's one of the 21 areas of crimes against humanity that we, of course, have been citing as a part of our We Charge Genocide 21 campaign. Yes, indeed. And that, and along with, of course, COINTELPRO, along with, oh, now it's queued up. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's what we kind of wanted to say to you earlier. It's time to get up and stand up. Well, you know, sometimes technology gets a little strange. At any rate, we're going to talk again about gentrification and some of the other 21 areas of human rights violations. Family, moving right along, because it seems like we're going to have a little bit of technical difficulty tonight, which is okay, because, you know, that happens sometimes. We're not going to let that stop us or slow us down. At any rate, moving right along, again, the We Charge Genocide 21 Reparatory Justice Summit number one is coming September 1st through the 4th in Washington, D.C., Labor Day weekend. Our position is, of course, there can be no more discussion, celebration, observance, or whatever, a so-called Labor Day, until there is some real kinds of advancements, real kinds of justice, and so forth, in reference to the free, hard labor, and that puts it mildly, that was inflicted upon our people. And so with that said, we hope that folks will support this number one summit. Our first major summit is coming September 1st through the 4th. The second one is going to be in December. That will be in New York. It'll be around the International Human Rights Day time period. So we'll tell you more about that later, but for right now, we're gearing up to do the D.C. thing to put President Biden on notice in our own way as we prepare to take our first million signatures to the United Nations. Now, we had wanted to do this, of course, at the time of the 70th year anniversary of the signing of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, but needless to say, COVID kind of put a little dent in certain things, and we had to kind of go with the flow, so now we are ready to proceed accordingly. And it was also good to kind of watch and observe some moves that were being made in some other arenas. And so we were able to kind of gauge that as well. And you know, very glad that we were, because it kind of helped put things in perspective. Now, you know that you got other people now talking about reparations, which is kind of real interesting, because it's not a conversation that they were having up until now. So apparently the increased energy, the increased work, and so forth that has gone into this struggle, I guess, you know, is starting to take hold. At least people are talking more about it, and some are being a little more actively involved in it. You know, the motives are questionable in some situations, but, you know, it is what it is. And so we know that either way, we will be victorious in what it is that has to be done in recognition of our ancestors. So moving right along with that. Speaking of the We Charge Genocide 21, which is also our movement for Black justice and human rights, again, we're going to talk about gentrification. And with that, we are going to talk with Sister Manira, who's going to share with us one of the latest plans that the city of Newark has in terms of what we call not just gentrification, but also modern day ethnic cleansing and social engineering. So when you really take the time to see and to hear and to pay attention to how this thing called gentrification is really moving, you know, all over the country, you'll know that it's a little more diabolical than what some think. It's not just about urban renewal. It's not just about community development, at least not our community development, but definitely it is about shall we say, locating or dislocating particularly Black folks, and we can prove it. And so we're going to talk to Sister Manira shortly about, you know, what's going on with gentrification in, you know, in Newark. Before that, we're going to talk with Sister Tawanda Jones, is going to be joining us shortly. She hasn't been with us in a while, but she's with us tonight, and we're going to get that Be More report. Yes, we are. A lot of stuff going on there in Baltimore, as usual. And it just seems to always, never ceases to amaze us when we hear these reports about the cops there. Just almost unbelievable. Also, tonight, for those who do not know, Philadelphia is moving on up when it comes to the number of murders. Well, unfortunately, I think it is past 200 for this year at this point. And, you know, it seems to, you know, just get worse and worse, particularly now. And we said this would happen with young girls in particular. Now we're seeing a certain kind of behavior with young girls. There was an elder here in Philadelphia, I think he was 73 years of age, who was brutally murdered last month. And unfortunately, it was two young Black females, I believe age 13 and 14 years of age, that has now, you know, turned themselves in. There was approximately maybe four or five young teens, but these two young girls are the two that they're highlighting at this time. It was all caught on video, and again, brutal murder of this elder. And so this was just one of several beatings of elders. And certainly in the past week or two, the shootings, the murders. Oh, by the way, this one elder that I was just speaking of, they didn't use a gun with him. They beat him with, you know, those things that they use to put for parking or whatever, the combs, like the combs. They beat him with that, right? So needless to say, there's something going on that really needs to be paid closer attention to. And we've been saying it for a couple of years now. For some reason, folks don't want to listen and certainly don't want to do the kinds of things that is necessary to do to curtail some of what is going on. But anyway, MWM, we have some plans of action for you, for us. And we're going to be introducing it as a part of our 25-year anniversary. And so with that said, we're going to tell you more about that shortly. So it's a family. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, hopefully we will have Sister Tawanda joining us. And so we're going to take a little break. And we will be right back. Thank you. All right, and we're back. All right, family, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. And as indicated, we haven't talked with our sister in a while, but it's certainly good to have her with us tonight. And, you know, again, there's always some stuff going on in Be More. I've been seeing so much, but, oh, my gosh, it just never ends. In fact, it just becomes, like, even more intriguing at times to just see what next. You know, what next? But anyway, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to talk to our sister, Tawanda Jones. We're going to get some updates on what's going on in Be More, and also, of course, her analysis. And before we do, family, I just want to bring to your attention, of course, in the background, we're listening to none other than Fela Kuti. Well, here in Philly, on August 9th, we are going to do a Fela weekend. That's right. We're going to play the music of Fela Kuti here in Philly. We're going to do like a forum on Zoom to talk about his work. You have to really know, if you don't, about Fela in terms of his life. There's been a play about him, maybe a couple of plays, actually. But Fela Kuti is just someone that, you know, we must always remember. And, of course, next month we'll focus on the his Earth Day. You know, what we do every month is highlight some of our ancestors. And so Fela Kuti will be one that we will talk about next month. And literally here in Philly, we are going to have a Fela Fest, a weekend, and it will also be our flea market. It's going to also be a discussion on Black farming, gardening. We want to begin to make certain that we connect the Black dots in such a way that we can now see a certain type of productivity that is necessary. So if you're in the Philadelphia area, of course, I believe it's going to be August 7th, and it'll be in Germantown, which is near a place called Vernon Park, which is where we'll be tomorrow, by the way, during our self-defense safety protection for Black women and girls. I'm going to tell you more about both of those things a little later on, but for right now, we're going to go to our live line, and joining us is our sister, Tawanda Jones, is in the house. Hey, sis, how you be tonight?
Places, how are you?
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Good to have you Black with us.
Yes, good to be here.
Yes, yes, yes. So, of course, I've been getting so much, craziness coming out of Be More, and I know you be singing it all the time. So, sure, give us a little insight into what's been going on here lately.
Yeah, well, pretty much what's been going on is just a whole lot of foolishness. You know, it's just been like a major attack on the squeegee, the squeegee kids, adults. Just, it's just been a whole lot. Like, that's just been a, you know, center of attention. And the most recent news is our race for the state attorney's office. So in case anybody doesn't know, the primary election finally came in, and it looks like it's going to be Ivan Bates, you know, for November vote. So he'll be in there.
Now, is this for mayor?
No, this is for state's attorney. This is Marilyn Mosley. Yeah, she's gone. So now it's Ivan Bates, and he'll be going up against Roy Hanna, which Roy Hanna won't even be able to hold a candle in the dark to him. So, yeah, it looks like, you know, he's going to bring it all the way home. And then also for our governor, and I'm excited, it's Westmore. You know, he won the primary. Yeah, he won the primary.
Okay.
So he'll be going. He'll be going up against a Republican, and it's one of somebody, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's somebody that Donald Trump, that's associated with Donald Trump. So, you know, it's like, you got to be kidding me, but yeah.
Wow. So, Sister Fine, tell me, is there a political team or PAC or whatever in the Black community that you know of that is really kind of on point? Or is folks just doing what everybody or what a lot of people do all over the country during these election times, and that is just vote, you know, don't really have forums to ask these real questions. And I don't mean just these old weak candidate night kind of things. I mean some real hard-hitting kind of things. Are they doing that in Baltimore?
Yeah, it's just like what you said. It's like everybody's just voting because they have not, like they've been having like some like candidate forums, but you know, you really don't see them. And then it's always, and the crazy part, when they do have these forums, it's always on Fox 45, which a lot of people know that they're racist news outlet. And then they always set people up to predict who they wanted to be the next, you know, mayor or state's attorney and things like that, because they kept on trying to make it seem like Thoreau was winning, and he wasn't at all. So yeah, but they had their little candidate forms or whatever, but I've not seen anybody else like, you know, whatever. So yeah, yep.
Right. So it's really just kind of the same old stuff.
Same old stuff. Different day.
That's a shame. That's really a shame. But, you know, again, until we, as Baba Kwame Ture would say, organize, 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 until we literally do that in our communities with a certain type of intent and really establishing the kinds of modes of operations that need to happen in our community, we're going to see the same old thing over and over and over. And we haven't really talked since, you know, these last two murders by cops. You know, I haven't talked about it much here because it's like, you know, why? I mean, people aren't really talking about doing anything. So what is the point to just talk about, you know, the murder in Ohio or the murder, you know, why, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, it's a lot, but and I'm glad you talked about organized. So me being, the founder of the West Coalition, and what we have been doing before election time, we have actually had, you know, our own thing where so we were just each candidate,
right,
ourselves asking questions and things of that nature. So yeah, we
right.
did that with each and every last one of those candidates. So yeah,
right. So let me share with you briefly, and then we're going to go back to your report. You know, we're going to be doing the MWM, A Million Black Women Rising Convention in October. And one of the things is going to be some political education classes as well as some training sessions, because what we realize is, number one, a lot of our people do not know the real the nuances, the nooks and crannies of the political process. They a lot of our people really don't know how that stuff actually operates and so forth. So we're going to do classes that provides that kind of information. But here's the other thing, the political savvy, meaning now here in Philly, they do a lot of the candidates' nights where the candidates, you know, have a forum and they can present their position and so forth. But where are black communities organized, meaning either collective, a cadre, a committee, that literally establish a platform? You know what I'm saying? So that when these people are running, there is a body of folk who are organized and have created a, you know, listen, here's what we want. You want our vote? This is what we want to see happen. You see, and have some kind of strategy or whatever to do that, to implement that. So I've been looking, you know, now there's a sister that we work with. She is running for governor in Tennessee. In fact, I was supposed to go there this weekend. And so as it turns out, the Bar Association is having their convention. So I'm like, it's not going to make any sense for me to go down there with all that going on. But at any rate, she's the first black person, period, but definitely the first black woman to run for the governor's seat of Tennessee. right? But again, you know, and you know, I don't want to bring any disparagement on it, but you know, we know anytime the black female in Georgia can run for governor a second time, raise three times as much money as the white Republican raised, and she's still trailing behind him?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm confused. I mean, not really, but I'm just saying, unless you really create a machinery of activism and so forth, and this, particularly in the South,
mm-hmm.
you gotta be kidding. She raised, I forget mm-hmm. how many millions, but it was three times more than what he raised, and she's trailing him.
Wow.
That's
yeah,
just
I'm
crazy.
Like, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not surprised. Like, definitely not surprised.
Right.
At all.
So, you know, so mm-hmm. logically speaking, you would think by her having more money than he had, that she would, you know, be doing well. Mm-mm.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Not when you black, y'all. Not when you black. It may not pan out that way, at which in this case it hasn't. So, again, we got to look to see what else do we have to do, and we have the demonstration of it. Mayor Chokwe mm-hmm. Lumumba.
Mm.
Mayor Chokwe Lumumba became the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, right? And again, mm-hmm. that was straight up redneck tech country, straight up. But he won.
Right.
You see, he won Mississippi, okay? So my point mm-hmm. is, you know, we have to look, you know, to a greater extent, Sister Tawanda, in terms of what are we actually doing? I mean, as a people in our community. And lastly, before we come back to you, your boy Crump, your boy Crump is at it again. Now you know who he's representing. The sister that took her child to Sesame Place,
uh-huh.
I mean. Oh, he's now representing her.
Yeah, definitely not surprised. Definitely not surprised. The Dog and Pony Show continues. It never stops. It really never stops.
Crazy. Crazy. I mean, oh, my
and
gosh.
I was just actually talking about, like, on the poverty pinks and stuff like that because
right.
I have a documentary, too, that's featuring a story about Freddie Gray, and they've been, like, literally following me for a whole week, and I did an exclusive interview with them, and the documentary is going to be out by the end of next
Ooh.
Year, sometime next year, early next year, and I'll be giving you more details. But you know me, I don't have no holes, but I called out all those poverty camps. I sure did. And then I even went so far as to say that every time there's an uprising, they always get the house Negroes to go to the family and get the family to be the calm voice, be like, oh, go just talk to them, let us do our job, and, you know, just calm the people. They do that in every case. Every case. I made sure
wow.
I emphasized that. Yep. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I've been seeing lately where they are exposing more Baltimore cops.
Mm-hmm.
In the past couple of weeks, there seems to be a lot of stories coming out focusing on cops that have been, you know, either caught up in drug situation or some other stuff.
Yeah, but that's always
wow.
the case because Baltimore is beyond the most corrupt state and city ever. Like, it's ridiculous. And they for real, when they show those little bit of people, that ain't even, oh, my God. Like, for every dirty cop that they show, you got one, you got, like, a whole lot of them, like, hundreds or more of them, thousands if not, of them that's doing the exact same thing. So, like, it's crazy. They know what's going on.
Right.
It's disgusting. It really is.
Well,
and,
like I said.
We, We just came up on my brother's 9-year commemoration. It was on Monday, the 18th of July. That's the day, unfortunately, he was murdered 9 years ago. And I'm so glad, like I said, that the documentary crew that was interviewing me, he was able to come out to the memorial and everything. And I just made sure that I'm just still calling out all these dirty cops. I want every 17. Last one of those murderers that murdered my brother. Like, I'm not going to never let his name die. You know, it's like as soon as we let our loved one name die, that's when he really did, you know. So I'm going to always expose these dirty cops. I'm going to always uplift Detective Torbett, you know, and Sean Suter, and let them know, like, I'm not just for the – I'm for every victim, even the police that they murdered and detectives that they murdered.
Right.
That's how dirty they are. They so corrupt.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, so. And then I don't know if
have
you know. It was, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. Finish that. Go ahead.
You know, I don't know if you heard about the latest thing, because, you know, everything in Baltimore is focused around the squeegee kids and whatnot. And recently, it was a Caucasian male. I don't know if you know about it, but it was a Caucasian male that got out of his car about 2 weeks ago and started, like, swinging at the squeegee kids. And pretty much he got murdered, and he got a little 14-year-old. He was the little boy was 14 at the time, but now he's 15. But they, you know, they got him up on murder charges, charged him as a adult. And this is kind of scary because, thank goodness, they have two lawyers that one of them being my friend, his name, they call him the warrior lawyer. But, you know, and Dennis, what's that joker name? I really don't roll with him like that. Warren Brown, I do not like him. But they representing them pro bono. So,
right.
I honestly don't know if that's a good. It's a good thing in the aspect that they can get them, but it's kind of scary to me because the last time when you know, they represented somebody, unfortunately, it was another teenager that pretty much was tried for they say killing a police officer when she shot at his head. He was waiting, like, they were robbing some teenagers in Prairie Hall, and they was robbing, you know, a house in Prairie Hall, and then the police officer Miss Amy came up. And she, you know, like, at the time, she didn't even know a robbery was occurring, but she pretty much, they saw, you know, a young teenager, they got a call about suspicious teenagers in the neighborhood type of thing. And, you know, she just jumped out in front of his, the SUV, and she shot at his head, and to me, it seemed like he made a mistake and rolled over her, I'm sorry. And long story short, kid wound up getting, like, double life. Like, it's crazy. That child will never see the street again. And the same lawyer representing him, so that's what makes me kind of scared. Like, I don't know. So, we have some sad times right now. So, it's real.
So, we haven't really had a chance to talk. I wanted to get your views on that series that came out, I think, in May, We Own the City or something like that.
Have you
got a chance to examine that?
To
look at some of it?
I saw every episode. For one, it was kind of watered down. It was truly watered down. Let's be crystal clear, because, like, I don't know if you remember, but I told you, like, one of the neighborhoods, that first neighborhood that they frequent, you know, that they made their little way around, was the same exact neighborhood that my brother was murdered in, which was very interesting.
Right.
And then I told you one of the first killers that murdered my brother, Officer Ruiz, was a part of the Gun Trace Task Force. But it was like pretty much they were talking about my brother's case without including me or my family or anything. So that was very disrespectful. And they just kind of swept that under the rug. But the part that was really disgusting was I did not like how it ended, because it made it seem like it left on the minds and hearts that maybe Detective Suter really did kill herself. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That was disgusting. I was like,
wow.
That was really disgusting. The way they had the actors acted out, and it was disgusting.
Wow.
When they know, and they left major stuff out of there. Like they wanted to create that narrative for everybody to follow the way they wanted to go down. And that part was sad. Like they put out some truth, half, not enough truth. And that was the disgusting part. Yeah. It really showed, to me, it showed 10% of their corruption when they got a whole 100%. So we got to see a little bit. You know,
Wow. All right. Well, you know, the beat goes on, and like I keep saying, until we start doing what needs to be done in our community, Sister Tawanda, this stuff is only going to get worse. It really is. You know, shortly we're going to bring on Sister Manira, who's going to share with us some of the latest antics that is now getting ready to be implemented in Newark in terms of gentrification. Now, again, we've been talking about gentrification for the past 10 years in terms of what's going to happen with these communities all over the U.S. where black folks are residing, particularly more so in the inner city areas. They can forget it. They're not going to have any say about what's going on in major cities in particular where there's a large number of black folks and particularly where they are in certain areas that's considered urban. That's all going to change now. It is. And so we've been telling people about this for years, and black folks still sitting back just watching. So again, come October, we're going to be introducing some of our plans of action for, you know, at least an attempt to lessen some of it. And so, you know, it's just so interesting to see in communities throughout the U.S., the lack of strategy or plans of action or whatever to deal with some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just amazing to me in this day and age that we're not seeing this kind of proactivity in doing certain things in our communities. I mean, what do you think? What do you think is the issue or the problem why we can't seem to see, and not just see, why there is not in this day and age the type of action that we need in our communities? What do you think the problem is?
It's a part of their plan. Like, it's strategically done. It's a part of their plan. And it's been going on for over 400 years. You know, 1,000 years, like, this is ridiculous. And it's like, until we wake up and really see, it's like they're going to keep on doing it. You know, it's really sad, like, far as with the gentrification, with everything. And even the way they control things, it's just like kind of a sidebar with this COVID thing. You know, like, it's with the pandemic, or as we call it, the plandemic, it's real. You know, and the reason why I haven't talked to you, because I wanted, last time I spoke to you, remember I told you I was starting to feel sick. And long story short, why did I catch COVID for the third time? I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
What?
For the third time. And then get this. So now, instead of like, you're supposed to have your, 14 days, which when I caught it in December, you know, I was sick like almost a whole month. Forget the 14 days because I kept being really weak. It was just like the brain fog. It was a mess. But now they got it where, though, not only your job not going to pay you, but you only have a 5-day quarantine. And that is beyond disgusting and stupid. And it's just real. Like, literally, I had to go back to work within 5 days. And I'm still kind of, like, weak or whatever. I'm just, like, over it. This is like, but we just need to pay close attention. But yet they still got, like, everybody can go in places without their mask, this, that, and the third. But yet in each and every last hospital, I don't know about your city, but in my city, they still got these bullcrap COVID restrictions that while your family member may be dying or sick or anything will need to be, you know, placed into the hospital overnight or for days or whatever, you know, you can't go in there with them. They still got these COVID restrictions in the hospital where families are needing to be with their loved ones. Make it make sense. It makes no sense. You can go to the ball game. There's no COVID restrictions, restaurants, none of that. But yet the most crucial place where you need to be at with your family or loved one, they're saying you can't spend a night off. Numbers have a stroke or a heart attack, you can't stay the night because they still got these COVID restrictions.
Wow.
I don't know about you, but I want you to check this city. I want you to investigate. We got to, this is stuff we have to follow and really figure out what's going on. You get what I'm saying? But this is unreal. Like, I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, it's everywhere, and I'm talking about restaurants, camping, yards, everywhere that you can go. But you better believe me, if one of your loved ones is admitted in that hospital, you cannot stay with them overnight. You cannot. No one can stay with them. And I'm like, so that means they can kill you in the hospital. It's like crazy. And then they got all these new vaccines and all this stuff, but yet people still catching COVID. They still spreading. And me being someone that's not vaccinated, you know, I caught it. And this is like, when is it going to ever end? Because, like, you know, it's like normally, like, with the flu, you know, after a while your body gets, if you catch the flu at one year, you're not, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to get it in the same year. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, literally, this year is not over, like, and I done had it twice. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I done had it 3 times, but 2 times in 1 year. That's scary. Yeah, that's ridiculous. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, my
God. When I first took, I took 5 different tests. I took 2 home tests. Both of them was positive. And the crazy part, nobody else in my home had it. It was only me. It was ridiculous. Yeah, I went to the different hospitals. Then, let me tell you one more thing. I know you're going to bring the other guests on. But now they're saying that they have this new pill or pills that you, the 5-day pills that you could take, like to help you, you know, lift up the symptoms with the COVID, right? So I'm like, okay, well, good. Let me be able to go. So I went to, like, 3 different places. You know they denied me for the pills? They pretty much said that I got denied 3 times. And then even by my primary physician, they pretty much said that if you don't have any underlying health issues, which I don't, thank God, that's what made me didn't qualify. But more importantly, that they got an age cap. They said I was too young for the shot, too young for the pills. And then my doctor wound up breaking it down to me. I said, well, look, I said, this is crazy. I'm like, why? Well, she was like, well, you know, this is a new pill, and we don't know if it can mess up your kidneys or your liver. And I was like, oh, my God. So give it to people that stay.
Oh, wow.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. This is too much.
So before we let you go, Sister Tawanda, what does the, here in Philly, I think it's now over 200 murders. What's going on in Baltimore with that? I know at some point they was focusing on Baltimore, but now it seems like Philly is jumping in.
Are you talking about the homicides?
Yeah,
it's like when I say sis, it's crazy.
Is it still like growing there?
Well, yeah, it's definitely growing. We had like 202 homicides already. It's like every day somebody's killing the kids part, and they're targeting our babies because it's a bunch of teenagers. When I say just last weekend, by Northeast Police District, where my brother got killed, it was like a drive-by with a teenage right on the Morgan campus, and they doing their little gentrification over there because they done redid that whole script. Like, if you go, when you come to see me, I'm going to take you in Northwood Shopping Center. This ain't no Northwood Shopping Center. It's totally different. I mean, they got a Chipotle's in there, different banks, big markets, all type of stuff, okay? A big upgrade. But anyway, there was 4 black teenagers, and 2 of them got gunned down, but 2 of them died. Literally right there at the police department, right there walking up the street. I'm like, you gotta be kidding
me.
Wow. Yeah, so it's definitely something strange going on. I mean, elderly women, young teenagers, they're the ones getting, and lots of women are getting murdered, lots of women. Like, I mean, and then everybody in Essex Park, everybody is pretty much, they're trying to do this little carjacking scheme thing, but everybody pretty much, most of the murders are occurring in people's cars or even walking down the street or they're getting murdered in their cars. It's utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, let me tell you what one of the latest things for Philly is. You know, the public transportation company is only one. It's called SEPTA. Well, do you know that in the past roughly two to three weeks, there has been at least three rapes either on the train or you know, and where you go into to catch the train, but literally on a, either on an actual vehicle, a bus or a trolley or a train, or where you go down to catch it. At least three reported rapes. So that's the new thing here for Philly.
Oh, my goodness.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah, they just say all they're doing is just taking us back. That's what they're doing, taking us slam back. It's ridiculous.
I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. So I just want to stay right there because I think this might be Brother Ray Ray who probably want to holler at you real quick. So hold on one moment. Let me check to see if that is him. Hey, Brother Ray Ray, is that you? Brother Ray Ray? Okay, maybe that wasn't him. All right.
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay, Turn your computer down or off for a minute because you were getting all that feedback.
Yeah, I got it. Yes, it is. How you doing, Sister Tawanda?
Hey,
letting everything
Ray,
know about what's going on. Well, they said a bunch of New York real estate people is heading to Baltimore, scooping up a whole lot of properties, and it's definitely coming down with the gentrification thing over there. You can thank Michael Bloomberg.
Well, absolutely. And
you can thank Michael Bloomberg.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Of course, they got to have some place to put all these. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to ask, did you hear Sister Tawanda say she done had COVID three times?
Well, yeah. Let me ask you: Are you taking the vitamin D3, the NAC, and the zinc, and all that?
Well, I've been taking vitamin D.
What about the NAC?
No, I haven't been taking that. Mm-hmm.
Well, the NAC, according to Jeannie and Dr. Mercola and the books that I'm reading, the NAC is the Coupe de Ville and the zinc and the quercetin. Once you take that, you really won't be having no problems.
You can search for it on the
internet where they moderately priced quercetin, NAC, zinc, and vitamin D3.
Okay, thank you.
Wow.
For that. They just feel like they're putting something in the air because each time
right,
when I get it, it's
right.
Interesting. Because like, as I was talking to my sister that day, like literally, like I didn't have a fever or anything. I just literally started feeling like something was in my chest. Like as soon as I walked outside, I felt like something was in my chest. And I'm like, what in the world?
Right.
I just started coughing, like real bad. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Just like randomly. Out the blue, wasn't feeling weak or anything. It's just like, this is crazy, but yeah. But yes,
oh, it's a shedding. Wow. It's a shredding process where people that's actually, according to Dr. Mercola and Dr. Scott Whitaker, is a shredding process where the vaccinated people is shredding it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
What?
And I believe that because I think I may be in there. You might be right about that because, like, at my school, it's only make maybe, like, only six of us teachers that are not vaccinated, but the rest are. Maybe and the ones that got, the vaccine. Yeah, they've been passing on to us. Yep, I believe that.
But along with the vitamin 3, you have to kind of get quercetin.
Mm-hmm.
NAC is the Coupe de Ville, and it's stuff is monitoring strikes, but you got to search for it on the internet. And Jeannie has the Irritated Jeannie's new book, Jews Are the Problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you could get that book from the Irritated Jeannie, he lays it down.
I bet you're gonna
get
your book.
Once you start keeping that in your bloodstream, you shouldn't have any problems. I also use a nasal spray called Clearex.
Okay.
It's a saline. It's a saline spray that you shoot up your nostrils, and it keeps any kind of mucus or anything from building up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And see, you're down in Baltimore anyway. That's where the hub is down there. That's where John Hopkins and Bloomberg and all of them is.
Yep.
It's setting everything up.
Absolutely.
You know, so they gentrifying Baltimore, and they got to have some place for all these Ukrainians, Afghans, Mexicans, and wow, you know, we getting nothing. We got a mayor in New York that's his head is so big, it's about to bigger than a watermelon. Can't tell him nothing. But
but that's true what you said, Brother Ray Ray, because even with me being a homeowner every day, somebody's sending me a text like they know me. Like, I don't have no sale sign on my house, but they hate to want. I want to offer you this amount for your house. ASAP, like, what are you? Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculous.
No, the plan is in full effect. The IG cities, the smart city technology. They're going after the Second Amendment. You know, that's why all this, and the Democrats done drunk the Kool-Aid. They done drunk the Satan's blood. I'm telling everybody, my family, and the Democrats and the Boule and all them, and let me tell you, Sesame Street is gonna give them that money. Because they go after them, and to get black folks still watching Sesame and this and that and buying the products, they're going to cut them a check. And the one thing you never hear, the first thing Biden said when Russia went into the Ukraine, economic sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing they say when something they can't control or losing control of. They say economic sanctions. But our civil rights leaders and Boules and all them folks, you never hear that no more. You never hear boycott. You didn't hear one person say boycott.
Mm-hmm.
And they never showed the face who was behind that costume.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're gonna give them some money and they're gonna represent black folks, and they're gonna split up the money to keep black folks watching Sesame Street. And if black folks stop watching Sesame Street, the thing will go down. But that's what they do.
Yep.
They're Satan. They're Satan, as the Bible says. And I don't go into the Bible that much. It's Satan.
Speaking of Boule, Brother Ray Ray, do you know this past week they had a big, convention here in Philadelphia? They had a convention here. It was the Zetas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And their theme and whatever was, you know, bringing up the Boule or some stuff like that. Yep, right here in Philly. They had their convention.
Well, they had a big convention in Charlotte, Gamma Phi something, and I did a Wikipedia on it, and it seemed like a lot of folks was getting hazing and losing their life trying to join.
What?
So, you know, that's a whole nother. Matter of fact, I'm going to find it right now. Well, Sister Tawana, you need a little bit more than some vitamin D3. You need the zinc, where you can get moderately priced. Quercetin, and NAC. NAC is the Coupe de Ville, the good one.
Okay.
And I read that in the books, because I'm reading Before I Shut Up Family in Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore Family in Philly. I'm reading The Real Anthony Fauci, and the thing with that book, I have to fact check it to make sure everything is correct. I'm also reading, I'm almost famous, Jews Are the Problem, The Irritated Genie. It's a small book, but it's an excellent read. I'm reading that. And I'm reading Glenn Beck, Stone Cold Racist.
Right.
And the name of his book, whether you like it or not, is The Great Reset. Mm-hmm. And what he's doing, just like Pat Buchanan, Stone Cold Racist, Southern, just like Newt Gingrich in his book, The Decline of the West, Glenn Beck is laying down this great reset, and, you know, and he talking to white folk. He talking to white people. Just like Newt Gingrich, The Death of the West is talking to white people. And just like Pat Buchanan, talking to white people. So you can say what you want to say about these white folks who are supposed to be racist and this and that and don't read them. But they sitting in the suites. And then you got the other boulets, because they tell you those boulets, they answer to the king.
Yep.
So the white boys are sitting in the suites, and he's telling it. It's a good book. And I'm reading Klaus Schwab, The Great Reset, the one from the Economic Forum. So they moving closer to what they want to do.
Wow.
Watermelon head, that watermelon head mayor, they sure pushing that vaccine for these kids.
Yeah, well, they're getting the boosters ready now. They're coming after the kids.
They're coming after the kids, and that's going to be a real, it's going to be real crazy because they're coming after the kids.
All right, Sonny, well, listen, we got to get ready to bring our sister Manira on, and you all can stay right there if you'd like, but we're going to get ready to talk more about this gentrification. So before we let Sister Tawanda go, Sister Tawanda, you got anything else you want to share?
Well, did you really, Sister Tawanda,
yes.
And Sister Filet, did you really think they was going to let all them abandoned buildings stay abandoned? Just like in Harlem, all those buildings stayed abandoned while the drugs destroyed Harlem. Now, all these people that's flocking into the United States from the Afghans, the Ukrainians, and all them, they're going to occupy them spaces.
Yep.
I definitely
hear you. You know, actually,
my sister-in-law was living on an Air Force base in Dover, and she got in there through a program. She moved from Brooklyn, and she was living on Dover Air Force Base. Nice. The rent was a program. They told her and about 40 other families they got to get out. They moving the Ukrainians in that Air Force Base down in Dover. They got to go.
Yep. Well, you're right, Brother Ray Ray. You know, again, I was telling Sister Tawanda, I've been talking about this thing of gentrification here in Philadelphia for at least 10 years. And people would talk, you know, yeah, this is happening and all of that. But then when you try to get them to do some work, nothing. Just talk. No action. No, well, listen, this is what we need to do. And da-da-da-da-da. We need to pull our money together.
and buy some of these properties or buy some of these lots? Nothing. And so now it's at the crisis. It's at the crisis part of it.
Well, they got to have some place for all these new people. All these new people that they letting in come in America, they got to have some place for them. And all these cities that was being destroyed, that's where they're going to come to.
Yeah, but it's even bigger than that. It's more to it than that. So we're going to really talk to Sister Mamira, and it'll give you us a better indication as to, see, remember, these plans were put in place 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When they started with model cities and all of that stuff, they knew, because, see, they do their city planning 50 to 100 years in advance. Because remember, you have the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Well, these are mainstays in our community, and so once they set up an agenda, it doesn't matter what the name is that's heading it up or they're in this office. They have the party plan. So they already know if you're a member of this party, you're going to go with the party politics and the party plan. So they can plan stuff out 50 to 100 years knowing that they're going to reach their goal because why? They're going to always have members in their party. And those members, they're not going to go against the party or you're not going to be in the party. So they're able to expedite those plans 50 to 100 years in advance because they know they have enough members to do that. See, we're not thinking. We don't think. We don't think like that. And until we do, they're going to keep playing their game and, unfortunately, winning to a greater extent. Because we're trying to play their game and not thinking that, okay, yeah, we do need to play it, but, you know, it's just like with chess. A master creates, at some point, begins to create their own game. Even though there's some standard rules, you begin to develop your own strategy. We don't want to do that. So, anyway. All right, my sister. Well, listen, I'm not going to hold you. I want you to get well, get well. We need you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you, Brother Ray.
Okay.
Everybody, don't forget our sister, Empress Chi, $2 Tuesday.
Let me tell you, if I waited for these folks, and you know, thank you, Brother Ray Ray, I did get your donation, but let me tell you, if I waited for these folks with these $2, Lord, I'd be dead. This has been an interesting situation that folks won't even send you two damn dollars.
$2.
Amazing.
Won't send you $2.
Folks got dogs. They spend $2 for some dog food. More than $2 for dog food. Okay. But we got a big surprise for them coming real soon because we figured out how we're going to generate some real revenue and do it without selling out, kissing butt, all that stuff. So it's all good. It made us just have to research and think even more creatively, and we've done it. So it's good. But thank you, Sister Tawan. It was an excellent thought and an excellent idea, and we certainly appreciate those that did and do support. We certainly appreciate y'all, and you really helped us to identify some other things. I can tell you that right now. All right, sis, listen, go get some more rest, and we'll be talking soon.
All right.
All right.
You love your talk to you later. Peace.
All right. Peace. All right. Let's go to our next. We're going to talk with Sister Mamira Bomani. She's going to share with us what's going on in Newark. I mean, there's always some stuff going on. Just like Baltimore, there's always some stuff going on. But we're going to talk to Sister Mamira about some very specific things right now. And that, of course, is gentrification. Hey, Sister Mamira.
Peace.
All right, all right. How you been?
Peace and love to everybody. How's everything?
Wonderful. So,
this kid man give
you
time of
Yeah, you,
wow.
You stay on top of what's going on. I tell you, I love your postings and the information that you've been sending out. That's what I'm talking about. You be, look, I'm telling you, you say, hey, family, you talking about research? Man, it's just be sending some powerful
listen.
Stuff. Yes,
listen,
you know, thank you much for that. Yep, no
much
doubt.
Much love and respect to you as well. Peace,
wow.
Listening audience. You know, you know, it's just a mess. You know, and it's all over in our communities. You know, gentrification here in the city of Newark, the ethnic cleansing has intensified here. Newark, once again, I'm gonna say, is moving forward, but without Newarkers. And it is definitely beyond time, you know, that we speak out and stop suffering in silence. And that is my direct message to Newark residents and residents, you know, in our black and brown communities.
Right.
You know, but just to touch on, you know, specifically here where I'm at, Newark, you know, we are in a state of emergency. You know, we are in a state of emergency, and I know this is going on in most of our black and brown communities, and it's beyond time that we all stand up across our black and brown communities and fight like never before. And yes, indeed, we are at war. They had waged war on us a long time ago, but it has intensified. We are coming out of a so-called, you know, plandemic. You know, we know this thing is planned. Is definitely done to, you know, depopulation is the depopulation plan in full effect. So they trying to kill us, do all, you know, biochemical warfare, ethnic cleansing, you know, people are going through mental breakdowns, can't even cope with what's, you know, what they dealing with, you know. So it's just very bad. We just, you know, but most importantly, what we need to do is fight like we at war. Like never before.
Yeah, not like we're at war. Fight because we are at war.
We are at war. Like never before.
Mm-hmm. You know,
just to touch on gentrification here, you know, which we got folks that look like us, you know, in office, you know, pushing this illusion here when we have the highest poverty rate in the state of New Jersey and in the county of Essex. We have the highest unemployment rate in the state of New Jersey and in the county of Essex throughout what, five black mayors at the head. You go up the higher part of Essex County where the wealthier people live, you know, the poverty level is, I mean, they live in wealthy, you know, and you come down to the lower part of Essex County, Irvington, East Orange, and Newark, under black leadership, we are in the worst condition known to mankind in this city. It's just bad. We had a few reports done by Rutgers Newark, who owns Newark. We also had them do a report before Who Owns Newark came out just recently on the housing disparity right here in the city of Newark. And under this administration, this radical mayor named Ras Baraka sold bulk properties of city-owned properties that is owned by the public, which is us, our commercial properties, sold these properties in bulk to corporations, to corporate investors. The highest selling land grab in the history of Newark under a mayor who's supposed to be radical revolutionary. If you go look at Rucker's Who Owns Newark report, see it for yourself. It just came out recently. I'll send the link to my President General, Empress Chi, and those who want that, you know, I'll post it. If you want to get my information, I'll send it to you. Inbox me your email. The highest land grab in the history of Newark. No exaggeration.
Wow.
Haven't come up with a plan at all to address these corporate investors that were in that report. What he had to say was that he said capitalism, there's nothing we can do about it. But if anybody read the book, How did white people get rich? These folks got rich exemptions. We could go on and on about, you know, what Martin spoke about when they gave these individuals land, farms, and businesses. And it's still happening today. And it's happening under folks who's supposed to look like us, but then turn around and saying that there's nothing they can do about it. I mean, make that make sense. Then we had the New Jersey Institute of Social Justice do an economic disparity report and also gave recommendations, as well as Rutgers Newark, who gave recommendations of what need to be done and what was critical at this point in time that needed to be done in order to at least, you know, give us some kind of remedy. And as of today, to these reports and recommendations, all it is politicians, you know, talking slick. While what's happening in our streets, you know, we got high rents, high foreclosures. We got murders every day in this city. We have a police state. We have police that's only interest is ticketing and towing people who are in these conditions. Economic impoverished. Then you got, the rent there, and then they saying that, you know, they said in the report that the mayor of this city and the stakeholders here had to make available 16,000 low-income units at the income of 700 or less. And everything that's being built here is being built $1,000 to rent.
Wow.
So how do you expect people who not only have the highest unemployment rate, jobless because they're not enforcing the first source residency hiring and local contract that's supposed to come Newark first, residents first, local residents, local contracts.
Right.
How you expect individuals who in the highest unemployment rate, because you're not enforcing the first source hiring or the local contracts that's supposed to be awarded to us, the residents, you're not enforcing that. People unemployed, and you expect them to pay these type of rent. Somebody make that make sense to us.
Wow. Well,
so we are in a state of emergency, not only dealing with Cation that has intensified here, the ethnic cleansing, the crime has went up like drastically under this administration. Crime, corruption, we're in a police state, you know, and you know, they don't criminalize folks who, like me, who want to stand, and other advocates who want to stand up and address these issues. You've seen it on the live when I sent you the clip.
Yeah.
They try to escort me out like about 6 or 7 cops because they trying to militarize our council meetings under the direction of Ras Baraka and his minions that sit on the council.
Wow.
And there was a letter that was sent to them for ejecting me and banning me for 60 days from ACLU, and there's still a district court case that I haven't even heard anything else about because they banned me 60 days and I put in a lawsuit. But they have militarized our council meeting, which is a public forum to speak about the conditions about gentrification and the crime. It's just like criminalizing advocates who are speaking out. That is what's going on here.
Right.
It is so bad here. You know, our people are turning in. I mean, it's like robberies in broad daylight, carjackings in broad daylight, murders in broad daylight. I mean, they just murdered a dear friend of mine while he was walking with his child. Tim right there walking with his child. In the broad daylight here in the city of Newark, crime in this city like I never seen before under this failed leadership, which is all a part of the economic impoverishment and the gentrification and the lack of resources and lack of jobs. People are turning in on themselves instead of uniting, standing, and resisting failed leadership and the government who are putting us in this situation that is by design.
So, Sister Manera, stop right there for a moment. So what you're saying, unfortunately, is what has been said, you know, not just about Newark, but Philly, New York, Baltimore, other cities, Chicago, Detroit, other cities. We've been hearing this for, you know, quite a while now in all these cities about what's going on with the city governments and what they're not doing and how they're treating us and all of that. Why, in your opinion, why do you think or believe or have evaluated that this is going on in such a way that many of our people, and again, I'm not even talking about the masses of the people. I'm talking about the folk who supposedly know a little something-something. Why is there not a greater effort for us to have our own everything? In your opinion, what do you think is the problem? Because it obviously is a problem.
These folks.
Go ahead.
They've been bought and sold. I mean, we got the NAACP. We have the Urban League. We have the New Black Panther Party. We have the People's Organization for Progress. We have the New Jersey Institute of Social Justice. I can name so many of these people. These people are silent night, oh holy night, about the issues. You even had the point where we had the NAACP president who stood up when the report came out, who owns Newark, and said that these people been calling her for years to sell her property. But you get on national TV when the report come out and you say what they called you years ago, and you knew this thing years ago, and you never did anything, and you're supposed to be an organization that's supposed to be addressing the racial and economic disparity, housing disparity, all these crises that we face in it. We had Reverend Barber come here and gave a statistic saying that the city of Newark, he said about 70% of the people here live in poverty. 50% in the state of New Jersey is in poverty. Gave the data right here in front of these organizations that's supposed to be black civil rights groups and clergies, stood there and heard the man give the statistics when he came here on June the 4th and did a rally here when he did the rally across state, the Poor People's Campaign.
Right.
These folks sat there and listened to the stats and walked away and as of today didn't come up with a plan of action to address this. They are silent. And when residents come up and speak out of God, they call us demagogues. They call us agitators. We went and snatched the mic. One of the community advocates said, "Ho, ho, ho, we need you to hear the real Newarkers." Went up there and they called us paid agents provocateurs. This is what they say, we getting paid to disrupt them.
Wow.
This is
the
new
that's
thing
what
now.
They do.
This is the new thing. So these folks that's supposed to be black militant, black civil rights, civic organization, human rights organizations, all of these people are silent night, oh holy light, paid, got jobs from the city, got homes, they got their pensions or whatever they got, and they just hey, hear no evil,
wow.
See no evil, and stuff in their pocket.
Wow. Wow.
So in this day and time, we need some new type of revolutionaries.
Well,
we need
some
people
that's
going to stand up.
Yeah. I don't even use that word at this stage of the game because that's a very serious word. And what we've seen, at least for at least two decades, you can count on your fingers what groups, organizations, persons are really moving in that realm, for real, for real. So we got to, you know, really begin to phrase this stuff differently. Because that's not the mode of operations that when you look at the word revolution, that implies some other stuff. And that's not going on in most circles, you see. So we really gonna have to kind of adjust some of the language or some of the concepts that we have. But I know your point, sister, but I'm just saying that's not the even to talk to people about self-determination, that's almost like you're cussing at them. In the past couple of years, one Negro here in Philly literally sent me a message and said, "Don't nobody want to hear that?" And I'm not talking about somebody who is not, supposedly consciously black. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about somebody who has done research and da-da-da-da-da and all of that. And he literally said, "Don't nobody want to hear that." When I start talking about self-determination, So going back to my initial question or point, and again, I know what you're saying, Sister Manira, but I'm saying, see, I expect certain behavior from certain groups. I already know that's what they're going to do. They're not going to do anything else beyond that. So I got that. I already know that. But I'm saying we have more people now that have read Dr. Clark, went to some of the lectures, Dr. Ben, Dr. Francis Cress Welzing, Dr. Amos. We have people who we know in our communities who, you know, really have grasped hold of some of these teachings, some of this information. And I'm saying in the analysis today, where is the work that exemplifies what they taught? You see, we have to really look at this critically now. Where are we trying to buy
it's
up
like
some
they
of these?
Everybody's for themselves.
Mm.
You know,
is that what it is?
For themselves.
Is that what it is, sister? You think that's what it is? And family, listen, if you all have some views on this, please feel free to press one, because we got to solve this problem or at least do some more to try to address it. Because Sister Manir is saying that it's about, you know, people being selfish or, you know, doing for themselves. And I think that's a part of it, but I also think it's some other things too. And we need to bust it up and get to the nitty-gritty as to what's some of the other things as to why these things are not happening. Okay? Because something is going on. Something is definitely going on. And I'm telling you, it is being very destructive for us as a people in our communities.
Exactly.
Okay? So, again, family, if you have a thought as to why, and again, I'm not talking about the folks that don't know, and I'm not talking about NAACP. I'm not talking about the Urban League, because I already know I would never expect certain things from them. But the supposedly more progressive groups, organizations, institutions, people, where is the effort to buy property? Because that's fundamental. Where's the effort to provide education for our children? That's fundamental. That's not rocket science. We ain't even talking
about
black businesses.
Then we got here Shaquille O'Neal's from Newark. Queen Latifah's from Newark. How about they get property here and they build luxury for the wealthy? I mean, how dare you come here? You are millionaires. You come back to your community knowing that your community, the majority of the residents live in poverty, highest foreclosure, a housing crisis, and you got, right now, as we speak, they're building another Shaquille O'Neal project downtown by Penn Station, a high rise.
Wow.
Who's that going to be for? But you come in, Shaquille O'Neal and Queen Latifah, come from a poverty-stricken area, Newark, and you come
right in
and build housing for wealthy people? Not for wealthy, because there's no wealthy people in Newark.
Right, right.
You can count them on the hands here. Right now,
well,
as
know,
we speak. One of those buildings that they build in New York and all over in Jersey City, high rise, down by Penn Station, Queen Latifah, come by a property and land and turn it into the rent's gonna be $2,000 and up. Who's that for? Who's that for?
Mm.
And how dare you come here?
So,
no,
again,
we in a housing crisis here.
So let's go back again to, and needless to say, there needs to be a balance, you know. There needs to be the capability of folks to make their money, but there also needs to be where they're giving to the community, and it's clear that that's what's going on, and here's the reason why. You know, just like a Nipsey Hussle or others who made it very clear, you know, we're going to make our money, but we're going to also make sure that certain things are happening in our communities. You know, you got a few folks that literally know how to walk that kind of line. And so, you know, we already know that the majority of them are not going to do that. But let's go back again to, the groups and organizations, because, again, I have no real expectations of, you know, Queen Latifah or, you know, definitely Shaq, whatever the name is. But let's go again to groups and organizations, and let's begin to examine what are they doing in our community. Other than, like, here in Philly, you can always get some food because people are going to give away. They're going to create the boxes of food to give to you. And I'm like, wait a minute. If the Black Panther Party was doing that every day all over the country, how on earth can we today talk about, and I'm not saying we shouldn't, but I'm saying where is the advanced kind of things that we're doing? Because if the Black Panther Party was doing that 50 years ago, and doing it every day, by the way, all over the country, how do we take the position today as if we're doing so much today when they were doing that 50 years ago? You see, we're not doing a proper evaluation with some of this stuff. They were serving thousands every single day, right? Had medical programs. So my point now is we got groups and organizations in our community that literally are able to get access to funds. And yet they might give out food once a week. And they're only going to give out a couple of hundred at best. Or when it's time for school, they'll give us some book bags and some school supplies. I'm confused. And why are we allowing this? As if this is something that, you know, is such a big, you know, accomplishment. And again, don't get me wrong, family, because I know some of y'all will say, well, that's a good thing. That is a good thing. Well, wait a minute. We're talking about progress. How do people do that 50 years ago? And then you talk about that today, like that's really something. I think they got something to share with us. So let's go back to her for one moment. And again, family, if y'all got something to say, come on, say it. Because we're ready to get down to the gritty and start busting this stuff up. So, Reverend, what do you thought? Brother Ray Ray? Oh, I thought that was Brother Ray Ray. Okay, maybe it was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, there you go.
No, I'm good.
Did you have a comment on that?
Oh, well,
I thought you had pressed
it. Funny,
okay.
It's funny that she said you would think that Raz Baraka was taken after his, you know, his father, but I heard about that too. They selling all the land, these Negroes are gonna put the nail in the coffin. And Queen Latifah and them, they using their name to come in there and buy those high price apartments. Because when we go to Trusses, when we go to the African Echo Study Group for Truss, it's quick to get Newark. We get to Newark quick from Newark into Manhattan is so quick. It's 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes. We from Newark, downtown Newark. Truss lives on Martin Luther King. And we back in Brooklyn in no time.
Right.
So Newark is next. And all the places that was allowed to deteriorate, gentrifying, and it's going to happen in Philly. It's going to happen in New York. It's done.
Yeah. It's been happening here in Philly. But, again, I want to get to the examination of in our communities, what kinds of plans of action are we talking about, or are people talking? Now, here's a perfect example, and I think we talked about this before, Brother Ray Ray. They got a group in Baltimore. I forget their name, but they got a lot of followers now. They do their calls and all of that, and they are investing in property. Now, some of that is personal, meaning, you know, for individual use, but then you got one or two groups that are doing it as a group. You got a few other people in, you know, all over the country, not all over the country, but in a few locations where they're pulling their monies together to try to develop something as a community. So my point is there are a few entities out there, and we're going to talk more about this next month, because next month is National Black Business Month, right? We've changed it, or we've added on to it or upgraded it to National Black Business and Self-Determination Month, because to me, to just talk about business, that's not going to get it. If you're not going to apply business to some form of self-determination, then all you're doing is recycling the white man's dollar and keeping that wheel rolling.
But
if you're not talking, right? You know, so you got to.
New York is dead. You can't pull your money together in New York and do nothing. They got it locked. Mm-hmm. At least y'all still got a chance in Philly and Baltimore. But in New York, these small hats got it locked. You can't pull your money. Pull your money. You're gonna have to pull your money together and come up with $3 million, because the houses in Bed-Stuy are going for 1.8, 1.9. So y'all got prime. You got prime in Baltimore and in Philly. The price of the house is still low.
So I get that, Brother Ray Ray. I get that, but I got to keep going back to something that's very critical. And as soon as we kind of evaluate that and deal and accept it for what it is, I think we're going to be able to move forward, and it's this. Leadership, for lack of a better word, has failed in our communities.
Exactly.
And I think we have to face that fact. They have failed. Now, some of it has been, you know, circumstantial, and some of it has been intentional. And we need to really look at that and then make certain that we don't continue to let that happen.
We vote them right back in.
I put the call out, you know, based on the crisis. This is what I've been drilling in on them as far as the solution. You know, and I was asking them to put a moratorium, because they've been selling up all the public land, city-owned properties, which is the public. This is supposed to be the public stuff. Giving away tax dollars, tax exemption, and all of that. That is coming from the homeowners and the public. So what I did, I've been calling on them to put a moratorium on all public housing demolition. I also said to designate land to build more low-income housing. Also, to do a dollar home for all the residents, especially the homeowners who already own homes. Dollar homes to get us up out of this economic poverty. Strengthen and enforce one-for-one replacement. So that if you take our public land that they have been demolishing here. If you take 700 people out of that public land that you demolished, you put 700 residents one for one replacement.
What about the role of Prudential?
80% of income. If you're giving out tax subsidy, we want 80% of the units to go to low to moderate income. And 20% goes to the wealthy. Reverse that. We don't want no 20% inclusionary. We want 80%, and you give 20% to the upper wealthier, whoever these folks coming in here, you know, from out of state and out of town, coming here to live here for lower rents than where they live at. Bring back the cleanup program, because we push for a homeless job cleanup program. Since we got a lot of homelessness is like the worst I ever seen. You know, the worst we ever seen is, and I call for, you know, the homeless job cleanup program. So instead of, you know, having them in the shelters, you know, trying to look around and going out of town for jobs, they could have a cleanup program. Since our sanitation department rakes in, you know, millions of dollars in that department. So why not put local people to clean up the streets? People that are unhoused, the homeless people, to clean up the areas. Put them to work. Empower them.
So let me now ask this question. Because you're absolutely correct. And certainly the things that you're proposing are the things that not only need to be proposed, but that these politicksters need to be adopting. So now let's go to the next step of this. You have the ideas, you have the information to back it up and so forth. The question has to be, and note, this is something that I've analyzed now in looking at 50 years of this kind of interaction and activity, researching, evaluating, looking at, you know, what they did in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even before then, even before, you know, that time. But the point is, what makes us think that they're going to do this? What mechanisms do we put in place to force that issue or to make that happen? Because here's the reality.
They're already on the book. Like I just said, the report came up with, they also recommend that Newark have a first source residency hiring law on the book. They have a federal Section 3 law on the book. Like anybody who live in public housing, if they demolish that area and if they rebuild,
right,
they supposed to employ people who live there under the Section 3 federal law. These are laws on the book.
So here's my question and point again.
On the book.
Here's my question and point again, right? Since 1964-65, we supposedly had the right to vote. Right? We had the right to vote. It's on the books. So we had the right to vote. My point is this. You're absolutely correct. However, here's the reality. What mechanisms do we put in place in order to be certain that this stuff is going to be enacted? See, herein brings about part of the other problem. We're in the 21st century, and what I mean by that is to leave it just at that's on the book or this is what they should do or here's what the problem is, it's not going to get it. You look at this for the past 50 years. This is what has been happening. But when we ask ourselves, where are our lobbyists? Where are our independent parties? Whereby we are literally recruiting our own politicians, paying for their campaigns or having a large role in their campaigns, and I'm not talking about just the volunteer stuff, I'm talking about the books, because that's the nature of the game, meaning any politician that is in office, they have to also make sure that they deal with their contributors. You see, that's why they raise those funds. It's not just what they need the money in order to, you know, put out the flyers and to pay for things for the campaign. The deal is that whoever contributes to the campaign
and I'm talking about, you know, a large number, not just $50, $100. This is why corporations will give monies to the campaign, you know, the thing, and they'll do it for both parties, by the way, so that whoever wins, they're still going to win. I mean, you know, because that's the way the game is played. What part of this do we not get? What's going to make or force the issue for policy to go into effect? You see?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, even though these individuals put money into their campaign, it comes from corporations and all these developers, yes, they do get funded, you know, through them. But at the end of the day, they can't vote for them. We, the people, vote for them.
No. So I get that part. No, see, this is what we do not understand again. The people do vote for them. And so what? See, again, and I know, and I understand what you're saying, but see, these are the conversations we have to have, family, so we're clear. You're absolutely correct, Sister Man. The people do vote for them. How do you get your vote to be transformed into the action that you want? If you do not have a coalition, a delegation, something that has some power, that one vote does what? That's not organized.
I get you, but, you know, like, We after we do vote, we do need to do those things. You know,
and I'm saying we've been knowing that since at least 1970. See, again, we keep having these conversations. Family, we do need to have these conversations so that people realize we're stopping at a certain point, and we keep doing that, thinking that because we voted for these people that they're going to do the right thing. No, that's not going to happen. Obviously, it hasn't happened. We've all seen that in our lifetime. And if you do the research, you'll see it, that that's what happened in other people's lifetimes. The point is, voting, just voting is not going to get what is needed. And I'm talking about the stuff that can be achieved. It's not going to do it. You have to create a body in order to make certain that whatever the community or this people, the people need, that's not going to happen with people just going to the polls and voting. They got to go to the next step of coordinating, organizing, and so forth. Because other than that, where's it going to go?
The biggest problem. One of the biggest problems, because, you know, people go vote, and then that's it. They don't provoke no accountability.
That's right.
You know, they
that's
don't do
right.
none of that. So they just, you know, just
that's right.
silence, you know, and it's
right.
the same thing over and over. And, you know,
right.
and I agree with you. There needs to be lobbyists, delegates, like a block vote. Like, if we put you in there, we got 50,000 to 100 more
there
plus
you go.
Money to take
there it
you out.
Is. Without doing it, without having that in mind, the rest of this is just ring around the rosy and the merry-go-round. And if you examine, so I'm saying, when are we going to go to the next step, family? Really? When is that going to happen? Because until that happens, it's like anything else. Until we do the things that is necessary today, the next generation will have the same conversation. But, okay, because we will not take things to the next level. And again, just like I said about the Black Panther Party, they did what they did at a time when nobody else was doing that. And it was incredible. It had an energy to it. And for that time period, it was the bomb.
And it had a
so
great impact.
Right. But I'm saying because
they
of
was,
what?
They was, what?
Because
they were
organized all over the country. See, you have to look at history and examine what got things done. And I'm not saying that's the all in all, but at least we have some examples. So who today are we looking at that's attempting to organize us on a national level in a context of economics or for lack, because I don't, you know, I don't even like to use that word except, you know, when I'm just trying to make a point. Because if people are just focusing on economics, all they're really talking about is a science that is really focusing on goods and services and so forth. It doesn't really necessarily focus on you actually obtaining a monetary value or advancement. So they had us caught up in this game of economic development and not really understanding that that can limit you if you don't understand the other components. That's why it's done that way. Most people in certain arenas, they're not going to deal or talk about finance and wealth building. See, they're going to avoid having that conversation with the masses or everyday folks. They're going to keep everyday folk locked into economic development. So you have to even understand another game that they play with that. But again, what I'm saying to folks is this. If we're not going to struggle, for lack of a better word, to build cadres that are going to be powerful enough to deal with policy, development, change, or whatever, then we're playing games. Playing games. Now I'm going to share, Sister Benir, I'm going to share, and thank you for sending me that clip. I'm going to share a clip that Sister Benir sent, because I think it's very important, because I've been in these different hearings over the years also. And sometimes it will produce something, because the way the system is designed, it has to give you some small wins. That's a part of the democratic application. That's what keeps it like that in appearance, that they have to create some wins, okay? But in the big scheme of thing, when you put it on the scale and balance it out, it is not only a crumb, but I'm going to share the clip that you sent, Sister Mania, because I want people to hear what people said at the hearing. So hold on one moment. Let me cue that up.
Homeless, tired, and homeless. A lot of us cannot afford these new luxury apartment buildings. Bottom line, the people don't want them. Residents came out in droves today, pleading with New York City Council not to approve NX3, a new zoning ordinance they say will change the Ironbound as they know it. It would allow development of high-rise, high-density residential buildings in the East Ward.
The more you add the market-rate units to the neighborhood, the more pressure you're putting on rents outside of the immediate neighborhood right there.
Beyond the rising rents, a lot of people said they feared that this tight-knit, largely immigrant community will be gentrified by suitcases and briefcases moving in from New York and Hoboken.
The Ironbound is a successful working-class neighborhood. We got a place in the New York metropolitan area where people of color can live, can still afford apartments. And that right now is like it's becoming an artifact. I am not against development in the city of Newark. I know that we need that. The residents are concerned. Their concerns are about the education, the schools being overcrowded. They're also concerned about the parking.
Others worried about stress on the aging infrastructure in a region that already floods easily and often and will only get worse as vacant lots fill up. Despite the pleas today, council members, including East Ward Councilman Augusto Amador, unanimously approved the measure.
As long as I am the representative of the East Ward and the Ironbound, the character of the community will not change. The only big difference we have right now is the heights issue. We can talk about gentrification. We can talk about other issues, which will be important to the community and are important to the community. We're not going to be able to stop these folks from coming into the community. We're not.
Many of those who came out in protest of NX3 left here disappointed, but there was also resolve. Some of them said it's up to them to hold their elected officials accountable and make their own investments in the community. As for the Ironbound, change is coming. In Newark, Joanna Gagas,
on JCB News.
Okay. So, and thank you again, Sister Manier, for that clip. And I want, did y'all hear what that person said? He said, look, y'all been talking about gentrification and whatever else you're talking about, but ain't nothing going to change. See, again, this is what they know, because we talk, we complain, and we should. But if we don't take this to the next level of how are we going to go up against this, realistically, what are we going to do? You see, because, again, go back to the 1960s and examine, because that's when gentrification went into full effect. It didn't just happen last week, last month, or last year, or even 10 years ago. It started in the 1960s. When you started, after the so-called rebellion, so-called riots, that's when gentrification went into policy effect. See, and so unfortunately, you know, now we got dumped with 4 decades of this plan being put in action. And the people who were in position, many of them sold us out knowing that this was happening, and rather than helping to prepare a struggle or fight against it in the best ways possible, they just gave in to it. So, you know, we have to look at this thing very critically. And just like that European said, we can talk about, y'all can talk about it all y'all want to, because change is coming. That's what they said. That's what they knew, because they knew that black folks was only going to vote and not be organized. So, family, listen, we've come to the end of this program.
That's what Barack is saying right now. We can't stop them, you know, but you stayed in the street before you became a politician, and this is how you saved your career, you know, attacking every administration about crime, poverty, jobs, everything, housing, everything. But now you in office, you know, you think they're not exempt. Really? Seriously?
Well, we have to do some serious thinking, family. We've run out of time, but I'm just going to put it out there to everyone for the future. If we're not talking about trying to safeguard what we build or what we're trying to build, if we're not trying to talk about stopping people who are trying to stop us, then I'm going to tell you, you're part of the problem. You're only going to keep this thing moving the way it's been moving for the next 50 years. If we're not talking about stepping up and making sure that we can safeguard to the best of our abilities whatever we're talking about or trying to build. And in some future conversations, we'll go more in depth into what, you know, things are about to unfold. To assure that we do the best that we can. I'm not saying we're going to do this, we're going to be there. I'm not saying that. But are we doing what we can? And I'm not talking about individuals. Sister Manier is doing, she's working hard in her community. And others too, Brother Ray Ray, Sister Keisha, Brother, you know, our brothers and sisters here, Brother Wali, others are doing things themselves, but I'm saying this is not enough. It's obvious. It's not enough. We have to get more organized and in sync with what's going on the national level. And we're going to talk more about this as we go into Black August. Because, again, if we don't start synchronizing some of this stuff like other groups do and not just have these conversations, we're going to be in bigger trouble than we think. So, family, listen, we're going to close this session out. I'm going to go to Sister Manier and get some closing comments from her, and then we'll talk to y'all next week. Sister Manier, your closing comments.
You know, just first I wanted to just thank you for allowing me the opportunity to present to you what's going on here in North, and in all our black and brown communities. Once again, thank you, thank you, thank you. Get well, Sister. Our sister from Baltimore, Sister Keisha, no,
Tawana. Sister Tawana.
Tawana,
yeah.
Feel better. Definitely take the remedies that our brother, you know, turmeric ginger, vitamin D, the zinc, the C, health is wealth, and heal thyself. Much love to you. Folks, we just, as always, as my president general said, what are we going to do? And it's definitely beyond time that we get up, stand up, and do something and do it fast, because we at war. We have to stop suffering silence. So the time is now.
It is. It
period,
is
point
time.
Blank.
Yeah. That's right. All right, Sam, listen, we're going to close.
Love this. Brother Bray Way and everybody.
Oh, indeed. Sister, continue to do what you do. You're doing a great job. I love the research and information that you send, and I really appreciate it. We're getting ready to put in place the Black Whirlwind News right now. Of course, we have an affiliate that we're working with, and that's the National Black Unity News. And by the way, the latest edition is out. Thank all of you who got ads. We're connecting with entities that are independent and are putting peace together. So we are an ally with the National Black Unity News. They have roughly a 2 million subscribers, either virtually or that actually get the physical paper. Again, we're going to continue to work with them and build until we get our own, which we do expect to have our own Black Whirlwind News publication for our October 25-year anniversary. We'll be bringing a lot of other information to you to kind of show you what we've been working on over the years. Again, if we don't take this thing to the next level, if we're just having events, conferences, conversations, festivals, and you're not talking about building an institution, guess what? Wasting time and dying slowly. Because without institutions, we're not going to survive the way we think we're going to, and make it harder on that next generation. So, again, that's what we're saying to folk. Nation building is essential in whatever capacity you think it should be in, because there's different modalities in the context of a nation. So we'll be talking more about that in the very near future as well. But family, listen, we're going to close this session out. We thank you all again for tuning in. We'll be back next week. So you know what we say right about now? We're going to leave you, as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Ma'abenhotep. But remember, there can never be any real peace, meaning Hotep, until there's truly Ma'atic justice, truth, justice, reciprocity, balance, honor, law, order. Because what we say, Sister Manir, if there's no justice, there's no what?
There ain't going to be no peace.
Can't be no peace, And best believe, some of us are very serious about that. We are not going to rest very well and going to try not to let some other folks rest too well either until we get what is rightfully ours. And so with that said, we say, promote you to Ashenda. Together we shall win. All right, Sister Manir, thank you again. And I'll be
much
talking
love
with you soon.
Thank you.
Black at ya. We're
thank
out, family.
Thank you.